Hi, and welcome back to the Mob Mentality Show. I'm Chris Lucian, and I'm here with my co-host, Austin Chadwick. And today we have our guests, Sean Cowan and Andy Graham. And today we'll be talking about a few things, eye-opening experiences and mobbing at scale. So please stick around. First off, let's have you both introduce yourselves. So Sean, can you maybe go ahead and just talk about yourself and then pass it off to Andy?
Yes, I currently work as a agile coach, but I focus more on sort of modern XP and software delivery. I've only been coaching for the last sort of 14, 15 months, and before that was a mixture of engineering, product, and delivery for the previous sort of 15 years. So yeah, that's what I'm doing in a minute.
All right, Andy, how about yourself?
So I'm Andy Graham. I'm an engineering manager, and I've been engineering manager, tech lead type roles for the last 10 years. Computer science at university, always been a nerd. Briefly a research scientist doing medical imaging. Briefly a trainee patent attorney. That was very much a wrong turn. Straight back to nerddom. Yeah, that's me.
Great. And so I wanted to kind of just start with your eye-opening experience, Andy, because I find this pretty interesting, and maybe you can kick us off, and then we'll very much likely have questions for you.
Yeah. So I work in a platform team, providing services to other teams in a microservices environment. And we were vaguely aware that some teams were mobbing, but I think we'd all very much agreed that it wouldn't work for us, because the work was too sort of, you know, you've got to do something over here and then you've got to go and do something over there. It wasn't like we were sat all day in the same code base generating new features. That's not the kind of work it was. But we hit a point just over 6 months ago where we had a job to do. Something had grown a little bit big, and it needed to be refactored and made sensible so that it would be kind of robust and scalable and all those great things. And we just realized that, like, you couldn't give this to a pair, because then none of the other pairs know anything about what's happened. You know, there were going to be so many decisions made, so many spikes and stuff, that you kind of needed everybody involved. And so if you tried to do it with pairs, you'd just constantly be in meeting rooms talking about stuff. So we said, look, let's try all sitting together and doing it together in a mob. And we did. And I think when we started it, everybody kind of imagined that we'd do it, then we'd go back. And it was like, you know, and roughly the same kind of time Sean showed up, and he was really keen on mob programming, and he kind of, you know, gave us a few pointers about it all and encouraged us to kind of have a location where this happened all the time. You know, it was a time of flux in the area, and there was a moment where we had a place maybe, but we didn't have like a big screen TV or a special table for mobbing at a site where we could do it every day. And he'd kind of impressed on us so much that was an important thing that we kind of, you know, we wandered around the office and found ourselves a table, you know, found an extra monitor or two and sort of created our own space to do it. Anyway, we get to kind of, we've been doing this for kind of 2 months, and that work was finished, and we realized that we wanted to keep doing it. And so there was a lot of support from the company that we work at. And so we've pressed on. And I mean, I guess I'd say the most surprising thing so far has been how quickly it's become a favored way of working. And I've had confirmation about this from the rest of the team, even though it sounds crazy. We almost can't remember what it's like to work another way.
Yeah.
You kind of think of going off and doing your own thing these days and think, really? That doesn't sound like a great idea. So anyway,
What were the benefits that you immediately realized, or why did it feel so natural that you know,
So there's tons of stuff. So there's a team bonding aspect. We immediately kind of within a couple of weeks, we all felt a lot closer. The ownership of the whole, but partly because we were doing so much work all in the same code base and making such dramatic changes, we all suddenly felt a great deal of ownership over the whole code base. I think everywhere I've ever worked, there's always been like a little bit of, oh, who built that feature? Oh, it was those guys, you know. Yes. And even if it's years ago, like, oh yeah, no, okay, yeah, that's kind of their style, and you know, that's cool. Suddenly, we all own the same thing, and so you kind of, and Sean's really keen on talking about you know, blame-free cultures and that sort of thing. There is no blame there can't be any blame in our team because we're all there all the time and we all make all of the decisions. And so, you know, there's very little conflict in that sense. I guess the one other thing I would mention is that another kind of surprising thing was that we were left in a situation for a couple of days because we had some absences where I think there was one day, actually, a whole day where we only had two developers around. And there were two developers there and the testers and whatnot. And they got to the end of the day, and in the retro that they had, because if you still have a retro, there's two guys there, they retroed it all together. And they were like, we went much slower. We didn't like it. We felt like we were going slow. And it's, and we talked about it after, and it's totally because when you're working in a mob, if you can't remember the thing, whatever the thing is, somebody else in the team is going to pick that up almost immediately. You know, if you don't know a thing, if you don't know how something works, somebody else in the team probably does. And so it kind of, the pace is just that much quicker because you've got so many more minds on the same task.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I remember one of my first experiences full-time mobbing. There was like an hour break where it was, we were mobbing, everything was going great. And then it was like an hour break and I'm like, I'm just going to keep working on the code myself. And oh my gosh, I felt how much slower it was. Like, I got to a point in the code and I'm like, oh, Eli would know what to do here. And I don't know. Or like, yeah. And then as soon as they came back, it was just like the speed picked up again. And I was just like, okay, yeah, I can see why I would keep doing this full time. But so that's a really cool story. I guess, you know, Chris kind of asked some of the things that why you wanted to keep doing it and why I keep doing it. Were there any challenges you guys faced early on that you had to overcome to, you know, in your mobbing?
Yeah, I don't know if you guys have heard of it, but there's this coronavirus thing going around. it's interfering with our presence in the office. Yeah. We went from, you know, no mobbing to mobbing together in the office, sitting around the same desk, all of that stuff, to in a very short space of time, trying to work out how to do it remotely. Mm-hmm. And really, actually, because of the way that the lockdown happened in the UK, you know, we were talking about theoretically, how might we do this on Friday? And on Monday, we were working out how to do it for real. And so, yeah, I mean, that's been challenging. I would say probably, and it kind of works for, kind of works both ways when you're in the office and when you're remote, but particularly lately with the remote thing and kids being at home and that sort of thing. People working at the same time, and if people in the mob have different working hours, it's difficult. And so you kind of have to, be very flexible with people. And it helps to have, I mean, the mobs are a very healthy size now. I think we've got, four developers and me and you know, two testers and a product owner and yeah. And so kind of you can deal with one or two people not being there all the time. But I think if you had a smaller mob, I think if you were working at about three developers, I think, and you had kind of people not always being there, I think you'd find it really difficult.
Mm. Gotcha. Yeah. So go ahead, Chris.
I was just gonna say, you know, regarding the remote things, I assume you eventually kind of worked it out and you're still doing that sort of thing. So, Maybe what did you learn about remote? Just because I think it's a hot topic right now and I keep asking people.
Okay, easy. Remote controlling somebody else's machine is a loser. Don't do it. feature branches for the or WIP branches or anything like that, for the most part, we've found is a bit of a loser. You have problems like you're working on a thing and you don't integrate for a while with mainline, and then you're in trouble, and just the same as you would be normally. So timed switching. So we were doing like 5 minutes driving each, which is way too quick if you have to commit and push and everything. In our experience, sure. If you have to commit and push and everything. And also, you kind of want to keep your commits clean, right? You want tests to be passing and that sort of thing. So you kind of don't want if you want to push dirty commits, then it's kind of a WIP branch thing, and we don't think that's a great idea. So it's kind of we tend to make it a little bit flexible. You try and keep it at around 10 or 15 minutes, and you try and make sure that you push a clean commit, test, yeah. Passing, all of that stuff.
So passing tests, push, passing tests, push, passing tests, push, right?
But having said that, I think that because there will be people now who are starting to try and mob while they're already remote. And the great thing for us was because we had that time when it was 5 minutes, there's a real feeling. If you go beyond 10 minutes, you're like, I've been sitting doing this for a long time now, and everybody else is kind of, you know,
yeah.
Waiting for me to go, okay, we're ready. And so it's kind of, there's a real emphasis on getting out of there in a sensible amount of time because we have that experience. And I think maybe if you tried it from scratch, there'd be a risk that you'd just get people running away for 45 minutes because they've hit an issue.
I like that idea of the driver is now a pressure valve for how much is too much, right? So like, no, we're not going to do that. We got to make a smaller test because I don't want to be writing code for the next 2 hours. Okay.
Yeah. We've got to find a different way of doing this, because if we do it that way, there's not going to be a clean spot for a little while. I've been reading about Kent Beck and his TCR thing.
Yes.
We have not. It's crazy time. I would lose so much of the code that I write. It would be really painful, yes. But I can see the value in a thing like that if you're working in this sort of environment.
Yeah, we tried TCR. Austin and I actually, I don't know, was that last week?
Yes.
During a learning session? Yeah, that was intense. We definitely kept things very small.
Yeah, I'm experimenting more with it. I'm starting to like it, but I do understand it is feel like crazy town. but it is interesting to see that your remote mobbing led to a kind of like a social version of TCR, so to speak. It wasn't the tool that was forcing it, but it was like a mobbing style. Yeah.
it's totally a thing that I can't think of any occasions where it's gone so wrong that anybody's ended up just reverting what they did. At least not when they've been trying to build a thing. There have often actually been occasions where the entire slot for a driver is taken up with a conversation, and while we're talking, you know, we're getting the driver to try different things. But what would it look like if we did it like this? And you start down a path a little bit, like a tiny little spike, and you get to a point, and very often that ends up with sort of, you get to the end of the some time, and you sort of say, okay, we haven't done anything useful in the code here. I'll just revert what I've got, and the next person can drive. But we haven't actually had a moment where, you know, there's been real serious code being written and then it's gone wrong, and then somebody's gone, right, no, end of my go, I'm going to revert now. Well, that's an interesting idea.
Yeah.
I think I'll transition topics a little bit. Maybe we'll start going up the scale, up the ladder, so to speak, to start talking about scale. And so one thing is, so I heard you say at the beginning that you're a manager. But are you a manager that mobs with the team, Andy?
So where we work, they call tech leads engineering managers. So it's engineering manager, engineering lead, tech lead. It's the same sort of role. So I'm with the team all day on a good day.
Okay, cool. So it's like a manager who writes code. Okay, gotcha. Very cool. Yeah, that's kind of like Chris a little bit, right? You write code.
That's where I try and keep myself. Often doesn't work that way.
Awesome. So the other thing I wanted to throw in was, so you mentioned Sean here a couple times. As far as Andy's experience goes, what was your perspective on the whole thing, Sean? And where were you involved, or were you coming at it from?
So I joined Andy's team at the start of the year. We've been together since then. As a coach, I have a couple of different teams, typically within the same group, sometimes across groups, which I've got at the minute. And it was a coincidence that I started on the day that they started mobbing. And I thought you guys, Andy, started because I was there. It turned out it was just a coincidence. And I didn't realize for a couple of weeks that we just happened to align perfectly. From my perspective, as a coach coming into that team, I think, you know, Andy's team is quite a strong team, technically. Quite a few seniors on the team. And so it was really interesting to see them evolve and to develop into this more social aspect of developing software and moving from some very strong technical minds to collaborating together and thinking out loud and challenging one another when they were quite technically strong. And I think it was surprising a little bit to me how quickly the team got there in terms of developing software collaboratively and socially, to the point where I think there were a few days where I was kind of walked away thinking, we probably need to bring a little bit more focus here, because these guys would get into discussions and then they would dive into deep discussions about stuff. And it was really easy for them to go off topic, I guess, because of their passion for technology and their skill set. So they could easily dive into a side conversation about test-driven development or something like that and lose sight of the ticket they were working on or the priority of the business or the priority of product and commercial. That was interesting to watch as they developed. And it was a really good thing to see. And I think, it's fair to say that Andy seemed probably one of the stronger teams in terms of things like mob programming and XP practices. At least that's what it's become over the last 6 months. I think some of the benefits from my perspective that I've seen, because Andy's team is pretty much serving a lot of other teams and is critical to the website itself, there was a lot of risk on the things that Andy's team was being asked to do. So things like managing that risk through having knowledge sharing and not having silos. You know, when there were live issues, when there were issues with the code base, they would typically be sort of the P0 type where we needed to address them because they were directly affecting our ability to for the website to function. So managing that risk through mob programming was a really effective way of moving forward and changing the ways of working for that particular team. It's probably, I think things have developed quite a bit, and the psychological safety on the team, the shared context, the shared understanding, working as a team. And I think the other thing that I noticed that was probably, I'm not sure that I've seen this happen very much in the last 12 to 15 months, but the team started to develop its own culture to the point where the team were functioning as like a pull system in focusing on delivering software. And all the roles that were in the environment of that team really started to step up in terms of being support functions to that delivery of software. And it started to instill a much greater servant leadership across, I think, the environment of that team. And that was purely taking place because these guys were developing their own kind of almost internal development and social culture within the team. And people were then having to, including myself as a coach and as a support role to that team, and even Andy as a manager as a support role to the delivery of the software, forcing us to kind of be servant leaders and serve that delivery of software and see it as a pull system from which everything else came into. So for example, rather than creating a meeting for next week and going off and inviting people, just in time, those people would come into the mob and be assimilated into the mob in order to deliver the software as and when it was required. And so it became a much greater sort of servant leadership type culture, which was really good to see. And I think it started to role model things to other teams that were witnessing it, especially when we're in the office. And that's led to other teams taking an interest in working in a more collaborative way, which has been good to see.
Did the organization push back at all on mobbing or anything along those lines when it started to grow within the company, or is that, or was it encouraged? How what was the landscape? What was the political landscape of mobbing within the organization?
I think it was something that some people, some teams did, but it wasn't really a strategic initiative, I guess. Yeah. It wasn't a strategic push until I think very much that the C-level, CTO especially, was on board, and the engineering directors were on board, and we hired some external consultants to come in and help facilitate, I guess, the organic growth of XP type practices, or at least to get XP to the point where it was seen as a viable alternative to Scrum and Kanban, or even something that integrated with those things. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I think people see, you know, these methodologies and frameworks as sort of Scrum or Kanban, which one of those two are you doing? When actually a lot of this evolved from XP. And in my world, focusing on what I would consider something like modern XP, it's going back to those original roots of Agile, but also taking into account the last 20 years and what we've learned. So, you know, 20 years ago, we thought pairing was dialing up communication and collaboration to the maximum. But now we probably think that mobbing is that. And maybe in a couple of years' time, it might be something even more than that, that mobbing is part of. You know, maybe we need to think about how we organize our structure in the organization and how we structure our product groups that support agility on teams rather than getting in the way of it. So, I think there was buy-in from the, you know, that C-level position, and there were investments made. And so that meant there was very much a push across the organization. But the way we started, even though you've got buy-in at that level and getting that buy-in is really important, it's these things have to grow organically. It's not something that can come top-down. It has to come from the bottom-up. It has to come from teams that are role modeling stuff and demonstrating. And the benefits of doing it rather than being told to do it. Otherwise it doesn't last, and it's, you know, what we call cargo cults and things develop where you, and that has been a challenge as well. So you'll get some teams that will be very much invested in sort of understanding the values and principles, but then also it's very easy to walk past a team that's got a single keyboard and a big screen and see that as kind of a thing we're doing now, and teams want to do that. And so they'll go off and get a big screen and a keyboard and start gathering around that and say, oh yeah, we're mob programming. But there's obviously a lot more to the external stuff that you see physically. There's a, you know, there's principles and values to it, which are more important and that really drive the team seeing the value and benefit of doing it. And I think there's also context where maybe mob programming may not be the best approach, or at least need to step back and say, okay, as a team, how are we going to solve this problem? And it might not be all of us sitting around that keyboard. It might be us individually going off and doing some research. And yes, at some point we're going to collaborate, but I think the main thing is that the team decides as a team how they're going to tackle that piece of work.
We totally did that, by the way. We totally had a reading hour. We did a couple of times where we were looking at something and we all just agreed that we didn't know enough about it, and so we just went our separate ways for an hour to read what we could, and you know, we'll come back later and share stuff, and it was really cool.
We often experience things, you know, things like that. I've seen many situations where it's study about it now so we can conquer it.
Right. Yeah, definitely. I have a follow-up question for you, Sean. So often people wonder, I myself wonder, what do coaches do in this kind of organization with mobbing or not? So what did you practically do with Andy's mob? Were you with him for a period of time, in and out? What did you do when you were with the team? I guess what's your strategy, practically speaking, for working with teams?
So my strategy, I guess, you know, go onto a team. I think there's a couple of practices which I think really dial up agility on teams. I think mob programming is one of them. I think another is daily retrospectives, or at least dialing up that feedback loop to daily or even intraday, depending on how the team is functioning. And then maybe a third is kind of moving away from estimates towards no estimates and moving towards more product focused rather than a project management based mindset in terms of delivering, you know, value and stuff. So my role is a support function to come in and to support what these guys are doing. I'm opinionated about sort of agile and the values and principles. The way I kind of see it is the coaches tend to own the values and principles, but the teams own the practices. So how they apply things in their context and in their world is very much up to them. And at the end of the day, the members on the team are the best ones to that have the knowledge to solve the problems. They're closer to the problem than anybody else. And whether it's a coach or a product owner or an engineering manager or an architect, you know, we're there to support that team in self-organizing and taking ownership of their journey. So as a coach, I tend to focus on creating sort of self-aware, self-learning teams. I think mob programming is a big part of that. I probably spent more time with focusing on daily retrospectives, as well as spending time with, you know, Andy as an engineering manager. So part of, you know, one of the things I believe is, yes, I'm there as a coach, but really the line managers in the organization are probably the ones that really need to be doing that coaching. And if I can help engineering managers and engineering leads coach their teams, then I'm going to be a lot more effective in the long term because they're going to be doing that when I leave. And we want to leave teams where they're self-sustaining and able to even coach each other. And that's one of the things I like about having daily retrospectives, is because the facilitation role in that daily retrospective really teaches every member on the team to become a coach, because you start to do things like gentle root cause analysis and make observations. You start to learn how to ask sort of open questions and coaching questions and clarifying things. And it teaches the team really to coach each other, and they start to own their own journey. So I probably spend more time on daily retrospectives than I did on mob programming with Andy's team, but it depends on the team and the needs of the team. And very much, you know, the engagement I get from the team will define how quickly we go on that journey and how far we can go.
Fantastic.
I think that's how I find most of my role going at the moment as well. I spend a lot more time trying to do better coaching with the team than managing anybody or even really leading anybody. It's you know, I spend most of my time looking at the team and trying to work out sort of how I can make those people be in my position in, I don't know, 5 years' time. And working with Sean has been really helpful in learning some of the techniques that you can use to draw that out in a team.
I think one question to ask yourself is always, how would you make your role redundant? And not to kind of actually make it redundant, but in other words, why are you here? And, you know, if I can turn or lead engineering managers to all start coaching their teams, then my job becomes a lot easier. but also a lot more effective, I think. And even that, I think that applies to seniors as well. You know, one of the main things I look for when interviewing senior engineers is do I think this person can build a team, lead a team, and coach them? Could they do it all themselves, or could they coach a team and build a team to do it? Well, that team is their hands and feet. And so I think coaching is a really powerful approach, even to management. You know, I think the people that get promoted through the organization should be your best coaches. they should be the ones, you know, your C-level people should be the most inspiring and motivating people in your organization. That when you see them walking into the room, you don't start thinking, have I done that management report or done all that stuff? You start thinking that you can accomplish anything because you have their support and they're inspiring to you. So coaching, I think, is a powerful pattern for a lot of the roles that we do, whether any leadership role, anything that we call management, I think we could do with less managers and more coaches, more coordinators, less kind of controlling people, managing people, and actually managing the product itself, and creating a world where there's trust, so that you're trusting people to get the job done, and letting people and giving people the space to do that as well. So
I think that's a good segue for my next question might be a good segue for our other topic, which what do you feel how do you feel that applies at scale, I guess? And so, you know, now I think you're experiencing mobbing at scale and I assume coaching at scale in this case as well. So for both of you, how has your immediate experiences affected, I guess, the greater organization, and what does it look like to have that sort of scale for you now?
So we're in a process at the moment of starting to cross-pollinate more between mobs, between teams, and particularly teams who are mobbing. And that's happening both because Sean's arranging it, and it's I'm learning to do it more when we have problems, or when there are questions that are forming in my head, I go out and ask other teams about how they're dealing with it. And because they have, because the way this has all worked, and because of the way Sean's worked with lots of other teams, because everyone has autonomy and it's kind of emerges how it emerges in different teams. There's no other team doing it the way we're doing it. And so we can answer questions for other people and tell them how we've experienced it, and they can do the same for us. And
Yeah, I think teams learning from other teams is quite powerful. And people who have done it firsthand, teaching others who are going to do it firsthand. Last year, we started a guild where we had 7 or 8 teams that were mob programming at the time and had either been coached in mob programming currently or previously. And we started with, you know, just working with the engineering leads or the engineering managers. And in the end, we had a guild of maybe 50 to 60 engineers. And the purpose of it was that cross-pollination, to get them to learn from each other, to provide a space where they could share their experiments for that week or the previous days, and what they tried differently, how did it go. And also a bit of a, you know, what we call a surgery session, where teams could come with their problems and challenges and the rest of the teams could help solve them with them. And that kind of worked quite well. I think it got things off the ground a little bit more, and it wasn't so much put together with getting as many people mob programming as much as it was increasing the quality of the teams that we did have and going deeper into some of the principles and practices of mob programming, but also sort of XP and the bigger picture. I think more recently, we're starting to rebuild some of that stuff. And again, sort of, we've started recently in the last 4 weeks, a round table every week with engineering managers where we discuss sort of ways of working and the problems and challenges that people are facing. I think at the minute, it's probably in scope, it's broader than just mob programming, but the point of it is creating something that is organic and authentic, and allowing it to kind of grow itself. And for me, that's a bit like, you almost kind of have to pick up where the wind's blowing in the organization. You know, where's the things that are going well and dial them up? You know, where's the teams that are really engaged and get them role modeling to the rest? And And it's not kind of cherry picking teams as such. It's more where this stuff is really being embedded in and seeing and providing that support so that it grows. And so people can see the benefit. You know, one of the benefits I think that's been quite eye opening to me on almost every team in the last year, and there's been about a dozen, is when the team starts to mob like Andy's team has been, it starts to create a very sustainable pace of delivery because people can come in and come out, but the mob keeps going, right? So that sustainable, that delivery pace starts to become not just regular, but predictable. There's a history of delivering often and regularly. And that starts to create trust with the product owner because they start to see a delivery team that is consistently delivering. And then it's almost like an enabling constraint for them to step back and stop saying, when are you going to get that done? When are you going to get that done? And start focusing on the value of what's being delivered. And it's almost starts to help them to move towards no estimates, all because it's creating trust. And I think trust is kind of, you know, it's the one thing that changes everything. So I think the biggest eye-opening experience for me in the last 12 months across a lot of teams that I'm on programming is it's creating trust between engineers and products where the product can step back because they're getting that predictable pace. But the other thing that's happening is the quality of the software is going up because of that collaboration. You know, one person on the team says something, then somebody refines that idea and thinks of something that they couldn't. And without realizing it, the quality of the software is kind of incrementally going up and up. And so there's less defects and there's a lot more software that's delivered that's actually useful as opposed to sort of just in case, it's more just in time type of development. And so I think that's been a huge benefit. But in terms of at scale, I think, yes, you need the support of your C-level people as high as possible, CEO, and you need that, you know, resources in place. But it has to be from the ground up. It has to be organic. It has to be authentic. And to some degree, you kind of have to allow it to grow at its own pace. And you have to be there supporting it. And you have to be able to perceive, you know, where in the organization is this going to grow? And also recognize where you're going to have challenges. And it's not that you're avoiding those challenges, but you're kind of giving yourself a bit of time to solve them, solve those, some of those problems. Yeah, so I think the guild's kind of works well. I think it's restarting again pretty well. And, you know, we're kind of back to sort of 7 or 8 teams or engineering managers again, and we're probably going to grow with the thing. I think it's going to be focused on, again, sort of engineering leads or managers, which I see as kind of the true coaches of their teams, those team leaders. And getting them to coach their teams. And yes, there'll be an emphasis on mob programming and daily retrospectives, and we'll see how far we can go with no estimates. But I think it's that organic, sustainable growth. And it has to be self-sustaining. You can't just say to people, do a thing. They have to see the value of it. And you have to give people space to see, not just see the value, but make mistakes along the way and where they see the before and after, you know. So one of the things I like about having a daily retrospective, for example, is if a team is engaging in a practice or doing things in a way which might be a little bit off, or there's a better way of doing it, you've got that reflection point at the end of the day to do that, where you can let the team see what it's like this way and then see what it's like differently, you know, in a way that's better. And them seeing the before and after, I think is part of entrenching it in people's minds and allowing them to kind of go on their own journey.
So. Right on. Wow. That's really appreciate everything you both have shared. It's very inspiring, and it's just always a really fun experience for me to see other people's experiences with mobbing and see it at scale as well. So we could keep going on for hours and I would keep learning, but I think we're hitting our time box. So before we close it out, we're going to pass it off to you, Sean and Andy, to plug or share anything you like before we close out the show. So why don't you start us off, Andy?
I don't know. I plug Sean for you. he's been very helpful. And what he said about not forcing ideas on teams and that sort of thing has been something that we've really experienced firsthand. So yeah, I'll plug Sean.
All right, there you go.
I think for me, Sean? Well, I'm not going to plug in. So I think for me, you know, one of the people that's influenced me the most has been a coach in UK by the name of Kevin Rutherford, who has his own consultancy with XP Surgery. He spoke at one of the first XP conferences in the late 90s with Alastair Coburn. And I was fortunate enough to spend 6 months with him last year, where we spent a couple of days together every week. And that was really eye-opening to me and influenced a lot of the ways in which I see things, particularly with not just XP, but things like root cause analysis, and all the different aspects of being a coach and what it really means to create change on a team. So I think, you know, some of those original guys, we need to listen to some of that stuff again. You know, if you haven't read Ken Beck's book on XP, read it. If you haven't read, you know, Ron Jeffries and Alastair Coburn stuff and some of the signers of the manifesto, read it. And sort of build from there. I think, you know, with the agile world has become a bit sort of a certified industry. You know, listen to all the talks where people talk about agile being dead and things like that. And I think going back to the, you know, how we got there in the first place is quite a powerful thing to do. And then learning from the last 20 years. So I think I'd just plug those guys. I think, and there's lots of other people. I love listening to Alan Hollob and Tim Ottinger and those guys on social media and just engaging with them. I find almost every tweet, some of those guys, I learn something and quite often will apply it, you know, immediately to something that happens in the next few days. Social media stuff is, you know, that constant dialogue and discussion of ideas where you're constantly challenging and developing ideas is a really good way to develop that mindset that means that you're not going to allow things to become sacred cows. You're constantly going to be challenging things. And I think we need to be doing that, including mob programming. You know, where are we going to be in a couple of years' time? Hopefully it's not where we are today.
We need to obsolete our podcast.
I'm gonna jump in and plug Brené Brown as well, who wrote a book called Dare to Lead that I read not that long ago because my girlfriend made me. it's about courage and honesty and authenticity and having hard conversations with people that you work with and people that you live with and I really don't think there's any alternative to that. And that's something that I try and live up to every day, as difficult as it is for people that play with computers for a living.
Awesome. All right. Well, I just wanted to thank all of our viewers and listeners for joining us today. And thank you, Sean and Andy, for being here with us. We really appreciate it. To all our viewers out there, if somebody could benefit from the content in this video or podcast, please share it with them. Be sure to like and subscribe, and we'll talk to you all later. So, bye, everyone.
Bye.